welcome back to the Pensburg Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Bahana. Joining me once again this week, fellow Pensburg writer, Robbie Noggle. Robbie, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Garrett. It's another good week. It's Wednesday. We're halfway home. Let's get to it.
And let's get to it, Robbie. The Penguins are in their home stretch here. Their push for the playoffs. By the time you're likely listening to this episode of the Pensburg Podcast, there will be 6 games left in the regular season, and we have a couple of games to talk about here in our recap segment. Starting with the first game, the Penguins played on April 22nd, a game against the New Jersey Devils. The Penguins would win this contest by a score of 5-1, improving their record to 30-14-3. Sidney Crosby, off the back of the Penguins' 7-6 win against the Devils that we covered in great detail last week, Sidney Crosby, 41 seconds into the first period of this game, gets the Penguins on the board with assists coming from Brian Rust and Chris Letang. His 19th goal of the season gives the Penguins a 1-0 lead. A little bit past the midway point of the first period, the Devils get their only goal of the game. Matt Tennyson gets the New Jersey equalizer here, his first goal of the season. And towards the end of the first period, Pittsburgh would regain and maintain their lead with Cody Ceci getting his fourth goal of the season at the 17:46 mark. Into the second period now, Brian Rust gets the scoring going in the second frame with his 19th goal of the season at the 12:03 mark. Jake Guentzel and Sidney Crosby registering an assist there. At the 12:28 mark, Kasperi Kapanen notching his 8th goal of the season. Pittsburgh out to a 4-1 lead here over the Devils. And Teddy Bluger wraps up the scoring here in the second period. Wraps up the scoring for the game, getting the Penguins' 5th and final goal. A shorthanded goal at the 15:59 mark of the second period. Like I said, the Penguins win this game by a score of 5-1. Robbie, we talked about the Devils in the past when recapping some of their games, often describing them as a young and hungry team. But it looks like here, with just judging by the scoreline, a 5-1 game, the Penguins obviously doing what they have to do to get 2 more points as they inch closer to the end of the regular season. Do you have any extra thoughts you'd like to add to this game you saw between the Penguins and Devils on April 22nd?
This was the game we discussed on last week's podcast about being kind of a litmus test for how they would respond after that third period on, I believe it was Tuesday night that week, where they gave up 6 goals and barely hung on to a 6-0 lead to win. And they went back to Jari, which I think everybody pretty much thought was the right idea. And you can't argue with the results. They came out, whatever momentum Jersey was carrying over from that hot third period, the Penguins completely took the wind out of their sails. Crosby, 41 seconds into that game, getting that on the board, just really kind of put their stamp on the game. Even though they did let them tie it, they did after that. They just, once they took the lead again, it was over. They just cruised their way through then, but they didn't do it in a way that gave Jersey any hope. They saw the third period out, but did it in a fashion where they just strangled the life out of the game and took home the 2 points easy and gave us some breathing room that night as compared to 2 nights earlier.
And the Penguins would wrap up this 3-game series against the New Jersey Devils here on April 24th. This is another game the Penguins would take. They'd win this game by a score of 4-2, improving their record to 31-14-3. Jeff Carter, I believe, registering his first goal as a Pittsburgh Penguin, if I'm not mistaken here, at the 9:41 mark of the first period. Pittsburgh out to a 1-0 lead, assists coming from Jason Zucker and Mike Matheson. Jared McCann getting a power play goal at the 12:50 mark of the first period, giving the Penguins a 2-goal advantage here. Into the second period, Brian Rust at the 7:30 mark gets Pittsburgh out to a 3-goal lead here. Pittsburgh looking pretty comfortable here. Jack Hughes gets his 11th goal of the season at the 8:45 mark of the second period, breaking the Pittsburgh shutout. Pittsburgh still leading by 2 goals, leading the score by a score of 3-1 heading into the third period. Miles Wood, just past the halfway point of the third and final period, gets his 15th goal of the season, cutting the lead to just 1 goal for the Penguins. However, Sidney Crosby registering his 20th goal of the season with... Now, the recap here on NHL's website says... the empty net goal for Sidney Crosby came at 19:59. However, if Sidney Crosby scored this empty net goal with 0.1 second left on the regulation game clock, any way you cut it, Pittsburgh wins this game by a score, officially by a score of 4-2. Robbie, the Penguins do what we had hoped they'd do here when looking at this three-game set against the Devils. They take all of the games here, even if they weren't in the most comfortable of fashions, referring to that wild 7-6 victory. But taking all three games against the Devils is exactly what the Penguins should have done. They did do. What are your thoughts on this game? You saw the Penguins winning 4-2 over the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, it was exactly what they needed to do, and it's tough to win three games in a row against a team. Something in hockey, weird bounces, stuff like that. But with the upcoming schedule, what it was, they did exactly what they had to do. Took all 6 points out of those games. It really didn't matter if they gave any points away because Jersey's so far out, but they did it all in regulation. They cleaned it up. They never left anything really in doubt. Even in the two closer games, they, for the most part, they controlled the game. Outside of maybe some hiccups here and there. And really, that's all they needed to do. No injuries or nothing serious to write home about. And then you had your Kasperi Kapanen came back, made an impact. It was all good news for the Penguins in those three games.
Penguins would continue on towards their closing out of the regular season, playing a two-game set against the Boston Bruins. And Robbie, this game was very often described as having a playoff feel to it. And we'll get to the second game that the Penguins played against the Bruins momentarily, where I also thought that that game as well had a bit of a playoff feel to it. But there isn't a lot of offense to speak of in this game. One goal between both of these clubs, and it came from the stick of Jake Guentzel in the third period. At the 4:03 mark of the third period, Jake Guentzel gets his 21st goal of the season. It would end up being the game-winning goal. Robbie, it's not often that two clubs like the Boston Bruins and the Pittsburgh Penguins meet up with so much firepower on both sides of the puck, and it doesn't happen very often where you just get one goal between both of these clubs. The Bruins registered 30 shots on goal, the Penguins 29, the Penguins winning 52% of their faceoffs. There was just one power play between both of the two clubs in the entirety of the game, and the Penguins receiving the only power play of the game towards the end of the third period after the goal had been scored. Robbie, I said it before, and I guess I'll say it again in describing it. A low-scoring, playoff-esque affair is, the best way you can describe this game. Any other thoughts you'd like to add between the Penguins and Bruins from April 25th?
Exactly what you expect this time of year from teams like that, and very well could be a playoff preview. Hopefully we get more goals if they make the play, or if they, these two teams meet the playoffs. But anytime you can win a game against a team like Boston, be it 5-3 or 1-0, whatever, you take the points and you take the victory. And they did exactly what they had to do. It wasn't one of those games where maybe Boston dominated and the Penguins just got a fluky goal. It was a back-and-forth game. The Penguins were probably the better team and probably deserved the win, and they got it. Jake Guentzel coming through there in the third period with a goal. It's just, if it's a sign of things to come, it would be a war between those two teams in the playoffs. So maybe we have that to look forward to, maybe not, maybe it'll be somebody else. But if that was a preview of what's to come, then I think we're in for a pretty great series.
Yes, I was very encouraged, and I often saw after the game people were commending the Penguins, especially the Penguins' defensive performance, and they were also attributing some of the success to the players buying into what head coach Mike Sullivan is selling them. So this is the time of year where you obviously want to get these kinds of wins. And also, you take the 2 points from the Bruins, who still have... if they haven't already made up the games in hand, they have, I believe, a couple of games yet to make up against the Penguins. So Correct. Getting two regulation points here does the Penguins very well, as they still look to potentially clinch the first place in the Eastern Division. But moving on to the April 27th game against the Bruins, finishing out this two-game set, the Penguins would find themselves on the losing end of this one, the Bruins winning this game by a score of 3-1. We haven't said that very often, Robbie, about these Penguins over the last couple of weeks, the Penguins finding themselves on the losing end of these efforts. But David Krejci gets the scoring going in the second period. No goals to report in the first period of play. David Krejci gets his seventh goal of the season at the 18:10 mark of the second period. Boston out to a 1-0 lead over Pittsburgh. That would be all the scoring you'd get in the second period, and the third period is where the Bruins really took control of this game, especially on the score sheet. Brad Marchand gets his 26th goal of the season at the 9:11 mark of the third period. Boston out to a multi-goal lead over the Penguins now. Newly acquired trade acquisition, Taylor Hall gets his sixth goal of the season, making it a 3-0 Boston lead at the 12:18 mark of the third period. And Jeff Carter would get a consolation goal, his 11th goal of the season, breaking the shutout at the 17:39 mark of the third period. And Robbie, this is kind of what I was alluding to earlier when describing the first matchup these two teams had, having a little bit of that playoff feel. I didn't catch a lot of this game, but from what I can recall early on in describing it, it was a bit of a continuation, at least on the score sheet wise, a bit of a continuation between what both of these two teams had done in their previous matchup here, not getting any sort of offense until the second period. But I think at this point in the season, with six games to go before the end of the regular season, the Penguins can definitely afford to take a loss like this. It doesn't do them really any harm in terms of their division standings and where they stand as they battle the Capitals for that division title. But I hand the microphone over to you, and you can give your thoughts on what you saw between the Penguins and Bruins from April 27th.
Yeah, so I really, for a long time, I thought it was going to be a deja vu from two nights earlier, from Sunday. But Krejci got that goal at the end of, near the end of the second period, and kind of just kind of what the Bruins needed then. They kind of just shut it down from there. The Bruins, they're a team that if they can get that first goal, they're tough to beat. They're like the Islanders in a way. But the Bruins, honestly, for as much as they've struggled, maybe the depth issues this year, they look pretty good in these two games. The Taylor Hall addition has been absolutely phenomenal for them. The fact that they got him for basically pennies on the dollar is almost, it feels almost criminal. But that's how it is. And that if this is a preview of the playoffs, like I said before, this is how the series is going to go. It's going to be close. It's going to be a long series. It might be 6-7 games. It's going to be tight checking. It's going to be tight scoring. It's going to, that you're going to need Tuukka Rask and Tristan Jarry to both be on the top of their games. It's going to be a battle. And until we figure out exactly where the teams line up and all the dust settles, you still like where the Penguins are, how they looked in this series, in these two games against the Bruins, a potential first round opponent. So yeah, the loss stinks and they could have cringed just that much closer to a playoff spot, but hey, you're going to have off nights, and that's kind of what they had here. Boston was just on their game. And I think it should be noted here here in the podcast that the Penguins end their season on Saturday, May 8th, which is a week from this Saturday. The Bruins, as currently, they have two games in hand over the Penguins. They actually don't end their season until Tuesday, May 11th. They have a game on May 10th and May 11th that will be the two games in hand. So wherever the Penguins are on May 8th, that's not necessarily their final position, because they will have to wait for some teams to finish, one of those important ones being Boston. And those two games are against the Islanders and Capitals. So that means that the Islanders and Capitals will not wrap up their seasons until at least the 10th or 11th, leaving the Penguins with some waiting time before they figure out where exactly they end up in the playoff picture in that Eastern Division.
That's a very, very, very good point you make there, Robbie, which will catapult me into the main segment here that I'd like to talk about here. I mentioned at the start of the recap segment, as things currently stand while we're recording this, the Penguins have they have six games left, and they begin a two-game set against the Capitals which could very, very likely decide the division winner on April 29th. But I'd like to steer the conversation into something that has been on my mind as we watch the regular season come to its conclusion. And I keep thinking back to a tweet that The Athletic's Josh Yoey posted back in early February, when I think a lot of what the NHL was experiencing due to some of the postponements that had to be made as a result of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. And for those that don't remember, either I referenced this in a Pensburg post at one point, or I brought this up on the podcast during the time. But here's what Josh Yoey had to say back on February 6th regarding the Penguins' schedule moving forward. Starting on February 14th, the Penguins will play 44 games in an 84-day stretch to finish the regular season, including 8 back-to-back sets, 4 stretches of 2 consecutive days off, 8 games apiece against the Devils and the Sabres, 6 games apiece against the Capitals, Bruins, Flyers, and Islanders, and 4 games against the Rangers. Again, that was on February 6th, and that was coming from Josh Yoey of The Athletic, putting in perspective the kind of already truncated nature of this 56-game schedule. And Robbie, I think it's a result of the NHL really wanting to finish its regular season as best it can, mostly because it obviously doesn't want to interfere with the Olympic Games that take place. Obviously, this summer, we have yet to see if the Olympic Games are even going to take place with the coronavirus pandemic still ravaging parts of the world. But I digress. The question I want to ask you, Robbie, is with the regular season coming to a close now and the Penguins inching ever closer to officially clinching a playoff spot and perhaps even winning a division title, depending on how these games against the Capitals go, do you fear that the Penguins with all of these games that they've played since the beginning of February, do you foresee that the Penguins will run out of gas when it matters most? They've played all of this hockey to this point to get all of their games in on a relatively on-time schedule to get the playoffs underway. Do you fear that the Penguins will run out of gas against a more physical opposition like the Bruins, like you mentioned, or the Islanders? Does that concern you at all as we head towards the postseason?
So I think there's a couple ways to look at this question, because one, you can ask that question about any of the teams, any 16 teams into the playoffs. They've all played condensed schedule. They've all had canceled games. They've all been playing a lot of games in a few amount of days. So, I mean, if it's going to affect the Penguins, it's going to affect everyone else. They're playing more games in a shorter time. If it was an 82 game season, they probably would have played between probably roughly 40 to 45 games in the stretch from January 13th it's just a little complicated because it doesn't quite match up, but they probably played slightly more condensed this year. There was, less of the, 2-day breaks, 3-day breaks that you'd see during a normal 82-game season. But I just think that's a question that can be asked for any team that's going to be in the playoffs. They've all played the same schedules. They've all played generally the same format. They've all had games moved around. So if it's going to affect the Penguins, it's going to affect teams like Washington, New York, Boston, Carolina, Tampa. All those teams are going to face this same exact issue. Where I think you have to look at another important thing to look at is that the season isn't going to end until, I believe it's the 16th. Sunday the 16th, which is 8 days after, I'm sorry, Wednesday the 19th is the last game of the season between Vancouver and Calgary. Vancouver and Calgary have 3 games at the end of the season. Now, Calgary and Vancouver are probably not going to be in the playoffs. But on Saturday, May 15th, Vancouver plays Edmonton. And Friday, May 14th, Toronto and Winnipeg play. And even leading up to that whole week, there's games with playoff-bound teams. I don't think it's possible. The latest anybody from the Eastern Division will play is Tuesday, May 11th, like we mentioned earlier. I don't think you can start the playoffs anytime that a playoff qualified team is still finishing the regular season. That would be Saturday, May 15th, which would be likely Edmonton. Unless Calgary makes some kind of last or late dash for the playoffs, which those three games, if Montreal keeps sliding and Calgary keeps winning, those games could mean something. So I don't know if it's right to start before the final regular season game is played. I don't know if that's ever been done in any league. Again, this year has thrown everything into complete chaos, so the normal rules do not apply. But you have to find a way to make the schedule work as well. So if, say, they don't start the playoffs till May 20th, that's a Thursday. That is 12 days after the Penguins play their final regular season game. There's going to be rust, but there's going to be a lot of rest. And that rest can go a long way. So that's just something to keep in mind as well.
Robbie, that's a great point. And it's something that I had thought about privately to myself. It's something that I never brought up on Pensburg or on the podcast, just because I didn't want to confuse the logistics in any way. But the point about the playoffs beginning while other teams are still finishing their regular season schedule is something that I thought about a couple of times recently because of the regular season coming to a close, and the teams that you had mentioned that are likely out of playoff contention, was it Vancouver and Calgary, the two teams that you mentioned, probably don't have serious playoff aspirations at this point. But yeah, you said that the rule book can be thrown out the window for this season, and it would just be another wrinkle added into what has been an already hectic and an already instantly memorable 2021 NHL season. This time next week, when we're recording our episode of the Pensburg podcast, we may have some more clearer, finite details to share with you regarding the scheduling of the postseason. If we have those, we'll obviously share those with you. But for the time being, it's something that we're going to have to look towards and see how the NHL will manage this scheduling snafu. I don't know if you'd call it a crisis per se, but it's another interesting wrinkle to finish off what has been an already instantly memorable regular season for the NHL. But Robbie, we're going to switch gears now, head over into our mailbag segment for first-time listeners or long-time listeners who have listened to this mailbag segment in the past or haven't, and you're interested in participating in this mailbag segment. You can do so by following along at our Pensburg Podcast Twitter account, at Pensburg Pod on Twitter. Every week we'll send out a mailbag tweet asking for your participation in this mailbag segment, and this week we have six lovely participants in our mailbag segment. We love getting all sorts of feedback from our listeners who take the time to interact with us. We greatly appreciate that. So, Robbie, we'll kick off the mailbag like we do every week. Question number one goes to you. It comes from Commander Kern. He asks this: do you have any thoughts on the Robin Lehner news conference? I'm sure the Penguins are also experiencing isolation. I understand the NHL will do whatever it takes to keep teams on the ice, but is there a limit or a line in the sand that should be drawn? Should the players stay silent and just play the game? Robbie, I think he's referring to the most recent news conference that Vegas Golden Knights goaltender Robin Lehner put out about he believes that the NHL made some sort of promise to the players about relaxing some of the COVID restrictions that haven't been followed through on by the league. So, Robbie, take it away. What, do you have any thoughts on what Robin Lehner has said regarding his press conference?
If they were promises truly just in words, then, yeah, I mean, then I could see the NHL. I mean, there's nothing signed or anything. It's not a CBA kind of issue, which you don't want the league breaking promises like that, especially on stuff that these players have dealt with so much this year. It's for the most part, they've been following the rules as best they can. And I understand it's tough. There's been pieces out from national writers discussing how much of a a wear and tear mentally this whole thing has been on the players. They can't, I mean, when they're on the road, they're pretty much in their hotel rooms. They hang out with one another. They can't go for dinners. And when they're at home, they got to be careful where they're going, what they're doing. I understand that the general public has been going through a ton of stuff, but at the end of the day, what people have to remember is hockey players are humans too. They have lives, they have wives, they have girlfriends, they have children, they have families. And just sitting in a hotel room, I mean, I'm sure you've been in a hotel room. It gets boring. I mean, there's only so many channels on TV. Yeah, you can bring your video game consoles with you. You can bring books. You can have your cell phone, laptops. But man, there's something, and you hear players talk about it all the time, something about the bonding aspect, which especially when you're on the road, going for dinners with teammates, hanging out, doing this, doing that. And it's just all gone away this year. Sure, like I said, but you can only hang out with so many people in a hotel room. It's just a lot on these guys. And if the NHL said that, hey, if you get vaccinated, we'll relax some of the protocols, and then to walk it back, one, yeah, that's not a good look, but I understand the NHL already is, like we discussed with the schedule, already pushed this to 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks after the original end date of the season. They want to get this all done by July. They have an expansion draft. They have an NHL draft. They have a bunch of stuff, and they want to start the season on time next year. So I definitely understand some of the frustrations, but as long as they're not breaking any signed agreement, I think it just has to be frustration then, because the NHL is trying to get this season done in the books just as much as the players are. There's been anonymous reports come out from front office people that saying they're pretty much just trying to get to the finish line. They all obviously want to play. They want to win the cup, but it's just taken such a stress toll this year that I just think a lot of people are just trying to get to that finish line so they can rest, recover, and get ready for next season. Question number two comes from Penn's Hen. Please advise how the COVID divisions will be playing each other during the playoffs. It's mixed up this year. Pre-COVID, it was Eastern versus Western Conference, now all over the map, including just Canada. Thanks. And I think she's just looking for clarification on how the playoff structure is going to be. I think that's what she's getting at. I think there is no real Eastern and Western Conference, it seems like. So I don't know, like, maybe one semifinal will be the Prince of Wales Trophy. The other will be the Campbell Trophy. So I'm not sure. I don't think that's been ironed out, but I think she's just looking for some clarification here. So I'll let you kind of explain it.
Yeah, I can provide clarification from, actually, this is what I pulled up, because I myself was confused when the playoff seeding scenarios and all that stuff came out at the start of the season. And I'm still a little bit confused, but our fellow Pensburg contributor, Adam Gretz, who also publishes work for NBC Sports, their hockey coverage, he described it in an article he published, and this is what this is how he laid out the seeding scenarios and all of that that go into this year's special playoffs. The top four teams in each division will qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is something that I'm sure everyone has already known. The top four teams in each division get a playoff spot, and there are no wild card teams this season. The first two rounds will be played within the division in a traditional 1-4 and 2-3 format, something that a lot of fans have been yearning that the NHL go back to for some time now, that 1-8, 2-7, that kind of format. And he goes on to say, you might recall this specific format from the old Patrick Norris, Smythe, and Adams division days. That was before my time, Robbie. I believe you're a bit older than me. You may remember that kind of divisional alignment for the postseason. But the 1-4 and 2-3 lineup is back this year for the postseason. Those interdivision matchups will make up the first two rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And after the first two rounds of interdivisional play take place in the Stanley Cup playoffs, this is where things get a little different. The four teams that advance to the Stanley Cup semifinals will then be reseeded based on their regular season point totals and then placed into a new 1-4 and 2-3 bracket. And he goes on to say that this means that traditional Eastern Conference champion versus Western Conference champion format is thrown out the window this year. And he goes on to say all sorts of options are now suddenly on the table, which means you could see a Toronto versus Boston matchup, Colorado versus Edmonton, Tampa Bay versus Toronto, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, Washington, Tampa Bay, all sorts of crazy possibilities that you may not have gotten in a traditional playoff format. Well, everything is thrown out the window this year. I hope that can bring some clarity to the question that you were asking. But that's as much as I can give you. Again, thanks to fellow Pensburg contributor Adam Gretz for laying that out there in his NBC Sports coverage. But yeah, it's
let me
go ahead, Robbie.
Just for let's say the season ended right now, Carolina would be the top team in the league. They have 71 points. And we're just gonna argue. We're just gonna actually no. We'll say if it ends right now, Vegas is the number one seed on points percentage. So Vegas goes in as the President's Trophy winners. Basically, what will happen is if Vegas gets to the Final Four, they're the top seed.
Yes.
And they will play the, let's say, who's be last right now? Let's say they play St. Louis. No, they can't. They're in the same division. Let's say they play Nashville, who has 56 points. Or let's say Nashville makes it. They are the lowest point total team coming into the Final Four. They would play Vegas, and then your Eastern Division team and your Northern Division team would play as a 2-3 kind of matchup, and then the final two would be for the Stanley Cup Final. And I think it's also important to note that the NHL is monitoring the travel restrictions between Canada and the United States, because at some point, somebody's going to have to cross a border. It won't be until the Final Four, which is probably at this point mid-June, late June. So we'll see what the situation is then. But the NHL said it is flexible on how it will handle that, and they are willing to adapt to any travel restrictions that are in place. So whatever that means, I don't know exactly, but it is something to keep an eye on should travel restrictions still be in place come that round.
You know, maybe we see some sort of a bubble enacted somewhere in the northern part of the United States or somewhere in Canada. Definitely something to keep an eye on. I hope that cleared up whatever confusion that you or other listeners may have had regarding the new playoff format this year. But question number three for you, Robbie, comes from the Battle on the Boards podcast. Who would you like to see most, and who would you be most nervous of in a first round playoff matchup for the Penguins?
I'm going to be most nervous for either the Washington Capitals, New York Islanders, or Boston Bruins. No, I'm going to be nervous. They could play, oh my God, they could play a AHL team, and I'd probably be nervous. But, boy, most nervous, I don't want to see Boston. I'm just being straight with there. Just because of the recent, I know the Penguins have fared pretty decently against them this year. Something about, I mean, maybe it's just 2013 sticking in my head a little too much.
Yep.
But I mean, Rask seems to have their number. That Bergeron line is just burying everybody, even the Crosby line. It's just so – things change when Malkin comes back. I understand that. But Boston is just a big no. If I had to pick between those three, and I'll even say I don't want to see the Rangers the way they're playing right now if they would sneak in. But if I had to pick between Boston, Washington, and New York, I want to take – I'd say New York would be my most favorable matchup. I know – Our editor King Hooks had a piece up this over the weekend, maybe it was Monday or something, outlining the three potential opponents. I think he might even have the Rangers on there, or maybe it's just those three teams that we mentioned, and kind of how they stack up. And each team has positives and negatives. The Penguins were 6-2 against the Islanders this year. That sticks out. But again, the Islanders play that shutdown. If they get that first two goals, they're really hard to come back against. The Penguins probably match up best against them, especially if they can get through the offenses play and they get that early goal. But again, I haven't seen the Capitals in so long. We'll see them Thursday and Saturday here. That maybe I'll change my mind when I see how the Penguins play against them on the weekend. It's been so long since they played each other. But if I had to say, I'd go Islanders, Capitals, Bruins at this moment. Question number four comes from Brian. There have been 13,764 goals scored so far in team history. This would not include, when he asked the question, Jeff Carter's goal against the Bruins on Tuesday night. So it's really 13,765 goals scored in team history. Of them, what has been your favorite one you've seen? Also, how many more do you think there would have been scored had Mario/Sid never missed significant time?
Robbie, I just want to say this seems like a question where you can definitely chime in at the end of my response. I think this is definitely a question that I'd like to get your thoughts on too. But my favorite in team history. See, he describes this as favorite one you've seen. So, yes. Like, should I have been in person for this goal? Should I have been watching it on television? I do have one goal that is my favorite all-time goal in Penguins history. It is the Chris Kunitz double overtime goal that essentially destroyed the Ottawa Senators franchise in 2017. I was at that game seven. I've written about it on Pensburg in the past. It was a spur of the moment thing to just go with my dad and his friend. And all of us got tickets. He was sitting in like section 223. I was on the opposite end of PPG Paints Arena. For those who have been inside the arena, we were completely separated. I was exhausted sitting through. First off, you're sitting through a game seven to go to the Stanley Cup final for the second year in a row. That alone exhausted me. Then the teams go into overtime. I'm an incredibly anxious person as it is, so going into overtime where one shot can send the other team packing terrified me. But no, we had to go 5 minutes into a double overtime, and obviously Chris Kunitz's goal is certainly one of the most famous in team history at this point, just based on what transpired after that. That's my all-time favorite goal. It will never change just because of what it means to me personally. How many more do you think would have been scored if Mario and Sid had never missed significant time? Someone did the math. I'm trying to see if I have it here. I'm doing research. Here's what I have on Mario Lemieux, and someone did some sort of calculation here. Mario Lemieux missed 761 total games in his career, including three full 82-game seasons and one full 48-game season. Ice time was not calculated until late in his career, so this person could not use previous metrics of goals per minute. He ends up with a calculation that determines that Mario Lemieux missed out on a projected 485 goals, 764 assists, and 1,249 points from the games lost to injury and cancer. And if you factor that into his career totals, he would have played 1,676 games, recording 1,175 goals, almost 800 assists, good for 2,972 points. That comes from Kyle Pereira. I want to give credit. He is a writer for FanSided that came up with this projection a couple of years ago. So,
how many points did you say?
Total points wise, if Lemieux, according to his projection, if Lemieux had played every single game according to this projection model, he would have finished with 2,972 career points.
So that's about 100 points higher than Gretzky. Let's say he doesn't play every game. Let's say he misses. I mean, he's still probably your all-time leading points getter. Give me the goals number again.
1,175 career goals.
So Gretzky was at 894. That would have been, oh my gosh. I've said this to people. If Mario would have been given complete health his entire career, he'd have every NHL record ever, and there wouldn't be. I mean, there'd be nobody. They'd be unbreakable. They'd be just absolutely phenomenal. It's just unbelievable what injuries did. And look at the numbers he put up with those injuries.
Yes,
it's otherworldly. He was only. Hold on a second. He was only. I mean, yeah, he was about 1,000 points less than Gretzky, but if you look at the games played, he would have put up numbers that were just, again, Garrett, you came into the fandom a little late. I was there for, I mean, I was born in 89, so I don't remember all of Mario's career, but he was completely formative in my childhood upbringing as a hockey fan. And it's just never, you're never going to convince me that there's anybody in the NHL that ever did it better than him. You cannot match that speed and skill. All respect to Gretzky and Howe and those guys. There's just, there was never a player, and there never will be another player like him. It's just, if he would have been given full health, he would have been, the numbers would be just mind-blowing. And those projections are, I mean, they probably, he wouldn't have played every game, but he would have put up numbers that would have just melted box scores. It was, he was phenomenal. And every time you see those things come up on like Twitter and Instagram, stuff like, if you could wish that one professional athlete had good health his entire career, it's always Mario for me, because it's just, it's unfair. The numbers he could have put up with good health, it's mind-bending to even think about. Like, just listening to you list off those numbers made me, I'm sitting here just shaking my head about how absurd they could have been.
Like you said, I was not fortunate enough to obviously witness Mario and his greatness, or even towards the end of his career. But even towards the end of his career, I was looking at his career totals in his like second to last and last season, and he was almost, if he wasn't doing it, he was almost averaging a point per game, even in his age 39 and parts of his age 40 season. So I agree completely with you, Robbie. When I was doing the research and pulled that up, I just couldn't believe it, knowing what Gretzky's career point totals are and his goal total, which looks to be almost going to be eclipsed by Alex Ovechkin, which is an incredible feat in its own right.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just mind-blowing to me. If he had been given a clean bill of health, how many more championships the Penguins would have won in their heyday in the early 90s? It's one of those things in sports that you can just play the what if game. And unfortunately for Mario's case, the what if game comes with all of the injuries and the cancer. But Robbie, I just have no words when I pulled that up. I knew you weren't going to believe that. And for anyone who's listening, and all the numbers that I listed off, it was mind blowing to read. I wanted to get your thoughts on. Do you have a favorite goal out of the 13,000 goals that have been scored in Penguins history?
I mean, the Malkin one in 2009 against Carolina sticks out, because that kind of just broke the Hurricanes in that game. That they went up 2-0 in that series and then swept them. Then that one sticks out for goals I've seen in person. Boy, that's tough. I've been to a lot of Penguins games, so it's tough to pick one that really stands out. I was at the, game two against the Senators in 2017, Kessel scored 1-0, in a game that they had to win. So many games I've been to, that one sticks out just because it was such an impactful goal, to that run. But, I mean, it's really hard to pick just one. But if we're going any I've ever seen, that Malkin one in the Spinorama in 2009 is right up there.
Yeah, Robbie, there are countless goals that you could pick. We have been blessed as Penguins fans to witness some of the great to ever do it on a sheet of ice. And that's why I tell everybody, don't take Crosby and Malkin, don't take their final years for granted, because once they hang up the skates, you may never see players like them ever again put on a Pittsburgh Penguin uniform. So every night when both of them step out onto the ice, don't take it for granted. Question number five comes for you, Robbie, comes from Brendan. Considering that the Vancouver Canucks finish like 10 days after everyone else, should the NHL consider having 2 days between games to wait for the North to catch up, or just wait 10 days postseason pre-playoff? It's not ideal to have a layoff, in my opinion.
And we talked about this earlier in the episode, but again, depending on when, just because Vancouver's not in the playoffs, they play games, and there's been games that are scheduled into that next week and maybe even later that do involve playoff teams, especially from that Northern Division. So I just don't know if you can start the playoffs. I understand 2 days off in between games maybe is an option. Not ideal to have a layoff. I think the players might disagree with that. Maybe not a 2-week layoff, but with the condensed schedule and injuries, they probably wouldn't say no to maybe a little break just to rest up before that run. I just don't think, I don't know. I don't know what the, it would be really weird to have playoff games going on while you have two teams out of the playoffs finishing up the regular season. They're obviously probably going to want to do it so they get paid, but I honestly don't know what the answer is here because there is no simple answer. And whatever it is, the NHL will probably be maligned for it. But overall, they just have to work with what's available to them. The layoff, I don't think it'll bother them, the players. Sure, there'll probably be some rust, but overall, probably welcomed by the players. I just have a hard time seeing them at least start the playoffs before all the playoff teams have finished the regular season. Question number 6, last but not least, is from Linus. Seeing Penguins perform this good and being in the top of the East, all this without Malkin playing, would this summer be the time to trade Malkin and get a good return? Clearly the Pens work and function good without him. What would be a possible / fair trade return?
Linus, in your question, you say that the Penguins perform well without him, and they certainly have. They have certainly performed beyond my expectations without Evgeny Malkin in the lineup this year. Before he went down with injury, he had 24 points in 29 games played. He definitely was starting to look like the Malkin of old. In his last 5 games played between March 9th and March 16th, he had 2, 3, 4, 5. He had 6 points in his last 5 games played before he went out with injury. But to answer your question, what kind of return would you get? Okay, well, he has 1 year after this year, the 2021-22 season, at a cap hit of $9.5 million. What kind of return would you get for a then 35-year-old, albeit a 35-year-old Evgeny Malkin, who I still personally believe has gas in the tank? Maybe he's not the player he once was. I think you could get a first rounder for Evgeny Malkin, to be honest with you, even at age 35 season. If you're not looking at draft picks, you're going to get at least 2 decent to high-end prospects. I'm no trade analyst expert. I'm not Bob McKenzie. I personally thinking that trading Evgeny Malkin is a bad idea to begin with. He and Sidney Crosby, as long as Mario Lemieux is the owner, I believe he and Sidney Crosby will remain Penguins until they both decide to walk away. So trading Malkin under any circumstance is useless and ridiculous, in my opinion. I think if you were going to trade Evgeny Malkin, you probably should have done it, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago to get the maximum kind of return that you may be looking for. The Penguins have done very well without Evgeny Malkin, but I want to remind you that with Evgeny Malkin, the Penguins can be even better than what you're seeing without them in with Jeff Carter playing his place currently. Robbie, I don't want to make it sound like that I'm taking it out on Linus because he's the one that just asked a trade question regarding Evgeny Malkin, and he's not the first and he's not going to be the last. But I don't know about you. I think entertaining trade ideas for Crosby, Malkin, and Letang at this point in their careers is useless and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. Crosby's ending his career in Pittsburgh. We can put that to rest. I know that wasn't the point of the question, but he's ending his career in Pittsburgh. And at this point, I'm just going to be shocked if Malkin doesn't, because I think people really underestimate the pull that Mario has in this situation.
Yes.
Because he saw what happened with Jágr. Him and Jágr were supposed to be, Mario was a Penguin for life, but Jágr was supposed to be a Penguin for life as well. And just the bitterness that kind of came out of that, not with necessarily Jágr and Lemieux, but with the Penguins fans and how they reacted to Jágr wanting out, even though in the long run it did help the franchise. I just think that this isn't, Chris Letang's a different story. Again, I still think there's a chance that Chris Letang does finish his career in Pittsburgh. But Malkin, there's just so much pull in what Mario says in this situation. You can hear the rumors. You've heard the rumors forever involving Malkin. But that's going to be the one trade they have to make that gets a sign off from the man in the box. And I just don't see him, unless it is some kind of critically important trade that is, it just blows my mind that he would ever say yes to it. So I just don't think Malkin's ever going anywhere. I just don't see it, especially not in a trade. I just, the more I think about it, the more I think 71 ends his career in Pittsburgh where he belongs. His number goes to the Raptors maybe the next year. And his entire career is just rumors of him being shipped out of Pittsburgh.
I think after, and correct me if I'm wrong, Robbie, did the Penguins trade Jaromir Jagr to give themselves some financial relief because they'd obviously been dealing with financial strain for quite some time before the implementation of a salary cap? Was the Jagr trade because did the Jagr trade help give the Penguins some financial relief at the time? Is that one of the reasons why they traded him?
Yeah. Basically, what it comes down to is he said he wanted out of Pittsburgh after the 2000-2001 season. And he basically, he wanted out of Pittsburgh, and the Penguins couldn't really afford to pay him and still put players around him that would have been to make them competitive at all. Yeah, Mario was back. Mario was still playing good. But it just wasn't possible for them to compete, and the financials were just so bad at that time for the Penguins with no salary cap that it just wasn't feasible for him to stay in Pittsburgh. And when it came out that said that he wanted out, he had the dying alive quote in Pittsburgh. It was just a culmination of things, and the exit wasn't necessarily even bad with the franchise. It was the fans who held on to the grudge and just kind of forgot about what all he did in Pittsburgh. And again, Jagr's a guy that I remember even slightly a little bit more than Mario, because he was more of my elementary years, where you retain a little bit more information of what you see and stuff like that. And Jagr was just, he was a world beater, and he did so much for the franchise. They don't win cups in 91 and 92 without him. And it was just kind of an ugly moment. And it's a shame that friction lasted as long as it did. I understand he went and played for some of the Penguins rivals after that. He went to Washington. He went to the Rangers. He was in Philadelphia for a while. He was in Boston. I understand that frustration, but at the same time, it was just a messy situation that got resolved in a very messy fashion, but it was necessary to have the Penguins today, basically.
And I think, just to put a bow on this and end this episode of the Pensburg podcast, I think those fences between, if any fences were broken between Jagr and Mario and the rest of the organization, it's my understanding that those fences have since been mended. Jagr and Mario are on good personal terms. And I think it's a matter of time before Jagr's number is sitting up there alongside Mario's number. I think the only reason they haven't retired his number is because he's still in his native country playing hockey. So when he does officially decide to hang up the skates, whenever that may be, I think it's a matter of time before his number gets retired alongside Mario's. And, 10 years from now, Crosby and Malkin and Letang's number, I think those numbers will be retired as well. The Penguins don't often retire jersey numbers, with only two in their franchise besides Wayne Gretzky's universal retirement. But I think Jagr's, Crosby's, Malkin, and Letang, I think those jerseys will hang up in the rafters as well.
I agree.
Well, Robbie, that will wrap up this episode of the Pensburg podcast. I'd like to thank you, and thank you to all of our listeners who stuck it out and listened to another episode of this podcast. We will see you next week for another edition of the Pensburg podcast.